morning. My name is Byron Peachy, and I led the local context group. There were 12 of us. Each year, for quite a number of years now, we've been doing a local context experience, in part because this area is a really rich place to learn about people from lots of different backgrounds and different traditions. So what we did is learn about the African-American community, the historic African-American community in Newtown, or what is now called the Northeast Neighborhood. And that's a defined area because of the days of segregation, where all African-Americans lived prior to the 1960s, 50s. We then also spent some time learning about Old Order Mennonites in the area, which is a more rural group of people, and then finally focusing on new immigrants to the area, and so that would include quite a wide variety of people who've moved into this area from other places. So most of our time was here in the Harrisonburg area, but then we also spent a weekend in Washington, D.C. with some things that connected with some of those themes here in Harrisonburg, and this is a photo, I believe, of our group of 12 in Washington. Nick Love and Debbie Emmerich are each going to speak about the experience.
Good morning. I'm Nick Love, recent graduate of Eastern Mennonite University. Actually now the graduate assistant for the baseball team, so you'll probably still see me around campus. I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to go on the cross-cultural with Byron, the local one. It was a really good experience for me, fit my schedule well, because like I said, I coached all summer also, so it worked really good for me getting to know Byron and everybody in the group, and also exploring the Harrisonburg area. I'm not from around here. I'm actually from Bedford, which is 2 hours south. So I'm not from around the area, and I had no idea of the diverse community that's in this area and some of the things that's happened, whether it was through the Civil Rights Movement or just people who have come in from different countries. It's still unreal to me, the community around us. I just want to speak on real quick two things that stuck with me. Like I said, it was the wide variety of cultures in the area. And the second one is it was just completely eye-opening to me to see some of the struggles that have happened in Harrisonburg, in D.C., and still are going on today. When we went on the weekend trip to Washington, D.C., there might be some of y'all who spent the whole semester up there in here. We got to visit Shaw. It was a place during the Civil Rights Movement that was completely destroyed. So to see this community, and it was very rich in culture, a lot of music going on. It was a really cool place just to watch a video on what it used to be. It was really awesome to see. And it was completely destroyed. So when it was completely destroyed, it wasn't even really the people that were living there that did most of the damage. It was people who came in and just rioted, burned the whole place down. And it was left with people who are from the area that had to try to rebuild. And they didn't get much help. It was really, for me, it was really sad to see, because even still today in certain parts of that community, as you walk around, you can still see that it's just, still dead. The community around there is still, it is regrowing and restructuring, which is good to see. But for the main thing that I'm taking from this is a sense of perspective. And like I said, I do coach here at EMU. So for me, I want to be able to help other people see, look, it ain't that bad. Like, you don't have it that bad, and you need to realize that, because it can be a lot worse. People go through a lot more than you do. So that's it.
Hello, I'm Debbie, and I'm a senior here. My major is liberal arts with licensure in elementary education, pre-K to 6, so I should be graduating in May. The reason I chose to do the local context cross-cultural is because I'm a single parent. I have 5 children, 2 of which are still at home, and minors. So I needed a cross-cultural experience that would allow me to be away and able to observe different cultures, but still be close enough to home so that if there was an emergency, I could get there if I needed to. So as Nick said, we did a lot. We went through the Newtown area. We took a tour of the Lucy Sims School, and there was just an amazing photo timeline that we saw there. We had various meals of different cultural foods, which was neat. We explored the Old Order Mennonite traditions. We spoke with the gentleman out in Dayton about that. And what I thought was interesting that he told us was how their schooling is a little bit different. They only go to school through the eighth grade in typical Old Order Mennonite schooling. And they also are based through their church. But typically what they do through eighth grade is pretty much equivalent to what public schools do through 12th grade. So that was neat, and it was also interesting to hear how they do without such luxuries as cell phones, because the guy had a phone on the wall that he answered. There was no cell phones, no TV, no internet, and that's just their way of life. So that was really interesting to me. It is a great experience if you have a reason that you cannot travel. I would say definitely sign up for this cross-cultural, because it's 3 weeks here doing all different kinds of things, and then a weekend in DC, which is amazing. Thanks.
I'm going to quickly come back and say, so one of the ways you can learn and experience some of that cultural diversity here in Harrisonburg is at the Harrisonburg International Festival, which is the last Saturday in September.
Yate Abene, I just greeted you in Navajo, and it basically means good morning or everything is good. In May, 22 of us, including our trip leaders, Jim Yoder and Gloria Rhodes, left at 3 a.m. here, bright and early, to go to Navajo Nation, which is roughly in the Four Corners area of the southwest United States, so basically where Utah, Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona come together, they form a square, basically. It's the largest reservation in the U.S., and it's about the size of West Virginia, but it only has one-tenth of the population, so it is very rural, very spread out. So it's only home to about 200,000 people, but 96% of them are Navajo indigenous people. So they've had to deal with a lot of things, forced relocation, resource exploitation, and little rainfall are a lot of problems in the area. Some of the desert areas only get 7 inches of rain a year, and because of these things, unemployment is around 50%, and they also have poor access to water and utilities, which makes kind of a third world sort of experience for them. But despite all of this, the Navajo were really generous people to us. They were very good, and they have quite a varied landscape across the reservation, in some places having incredible snow-capped mountains, all the way down to desert, and also rock formations, including the famous Monument Valley.
My name is Brendan Zaude. I'm a senior here. I was obviously on this cross-cultural trip, and I'm just going to speak with y'all about one of the days. We went to a school, it's called the Star School. It's a very unique school. It's completely off the grid, so they're obviously very sustainable, which is good in EMU's eye. But that was a really neat school. It was just really cool to get to know some of the young Navajo kids, just hear their stories and learn from where they grew up from. But I'm going to read y'all a little short part of my journal from that day and talk a little bit more after I read this. This school had a family-like feeling about it. It made it seem like nothing could break these kids apart. When we were waiting for our sheep to cook, which I'll talk about here in a second, the baseball guys, who were close friends of mine, and myself joined the school children at recess. They were shooting hoops on one of the basketball courts, so finally we gained enough courage to go up and start playing with them. Eventually, as time went on, a basketball game erupted. The kids continued to flock in and play with us because they enjoyed our company. I will say at first they were pretty shy, but then eventually they loosened up. They were all sad once recess was over because they had to go back to class and we got to stay out and play basketball. So I skipped over the sheep at the start, and I didn't mean to. We went to the Star School. One of the things that they taught us at the start of the morning was how they blessed their food before they began to cook it. And they showed us how they stripped down the sheep and how they cooked each separate part and how they used all the sheep, which was really interesting. And I know all of us were very nervous as far as tasting that for the first time, but it was actually really, really good. But the one thing I really took away from playing basketball with these kids was that for about 20 minutes there, it didn't matter where I came from or the privileges that I grew up with, and it didn't matter where they came from or the sacrifices and struggles that they have had in their life. For about 20 minutes, we were just playing basketball. We're all kids, and it was really enjoyable, and it was really cool because, like I said, I'm from the East Coast, and they're from the West Coast, and it didn't matter. It felt like I was back home playing in the backyard with all my good buddies. It was really cool, and it was just interesting to see how the kids really took to us, and they kind of welcomed us in. And one really cool thing was one kid fell, and before any of us older kids, you know, because we were going to try and take care of him, make sure he was okay, you couldn't even see the kid because there was about 12, 15 kids around him making sure that he was okay. It was just really cool because, you know, when I grew up in grade school, someone got hurt, you just kind of dealt with it, went home, and you cried to your mom. But these kids, you could tell, like, they were a true family because, like I said, there was about 15 kids making sure that he was okay, and that was really cool to see. So that was my little experience in Arizona.
My name's Brianna Stanton, and I'm a senior here at EMU. So what I'm going to talk about is the uranium mining, which occurred in Navajo Nation. So what happened was from about World War II to about 1986, there are about 300 million tons of uranium that was extracted from Navajo Nation. So what happened was that they abandoned the mines, so they left about 500 mines on Navajo land. So what happened was that many of the Navajo people got sick, so some of them got lung cancer and other things like that. So what the U.S. came up with was a five-year plan, which was to help close down some of those mines. A lot of those mines are still there, about 500 are still left, and they just came out in 2014 with another five-year plan. So we had the pleasure of talking to Mary and Betty, I believe her name was, who talked to us about the mines and how it affected their family. They couldn't drink the water because it was so, had so much radiation in it. Both of them actually got, I think, have some type of sickness because of this uranium mining. They lost uncles, brothers, sisters, dads, all of that. So it kind of impacted me personally because these people were so welcoming to us throughout our entire experience. Like our home stays, we had water, we had electricity, we had TV, and they were so open to us. So I think that it impacted me to see that they were treated so badly by the U.S. and they still are open to everyone.
Hi, I'm Clay Cordell. So me and a group of five other guys stayed in one of the homestays. There were three different groups, and it was split up in different numbers. So there was a group of, I believe, eight and a smaller group of six. So my homestay's father, his name was John Willie, and Jack was also in homestay with me. So we stayed in his hogan, which is a small round building that's about 25 feet in diameter. Historically, that would have been used for ceremonies, and some people still use them for ceremonies, but this was a cement block building instead. And John and his girlfriend and daughter treated us very, very well. Like other people said, we were welcomed consistently and treated like royalty. I mean, I have a Mennonite mom, and I have not eaten that well in years. So John Willie's father's name is George Willie, and George is a Navajo Kotar. So for those of you who don't know, the Navajo Code Talkers were used in the in World War II because the Navajo language is distinct enough from other languages that it was an impossible code to break. So there were many other native languages that had been used and failed, and the U.S. military came out to some of the schools on the Navajo Nation and basically asked a number of Navajo men to enter the military and work as code talkers. So George Willie is one of about a dozen of these men who are still left alive. And we had the fortune of getting to hear him speak about his experience, and his daughter helped explain some of those things and clarify some of the details. And our group, our homestay group, also got to work with John and his parents, so George and Mary. And we worked with them and then went to a Memorial Day celebration because Memorial Day took place while we were there. And he talked all the time about how much they appreciated us for the, just, I mean, we barely did anything. We worked for a day, like helping them weed and things. And his wife doesn't speak English. And so when she was talking with people, we didn't really understand what she was saying. And one of the people translated for us that she had been bragging about her pale, shiny grandchildren that had come to help out. So we felt really honored by that. And then also on our trip, we were with Rob, who is a Navajo guy who spent the course of the trip with us and basically served as another leader with Jim and Gloria. And he's a great generalist, so he's knowledgeable on history and culture and social structures. And he was available for all the questions that we had to ask, and he was very helpful with interactions and explaining, like, here's something that you should do to respect the grandmothers in the village, or, like, here are different things that you can do to show your respect for people. But he was also, like, we would say, hey, we found this plant, and it's really interesting because there's, like, six plants out here, and he could tell us, even though he didn't have any specific experience with those things, just being a learned person, he would know the purpose of the plant and the different ways that it was used in medicine and in ceremonies and all sorts of things. And he introduced us to many people, and Rob was a great addition to our group. Thanks.
Good morning. We are the Bolivia group. We were in Bolivia for 3 weeks this summer. We traveled to three different cities, Santa Cruz, Cochabamba, and La Paz. We are all excited to be back, but miss it very greatly. So now we have some of us are going to share some reflections about different things we experienced in each city.
So I'll just be covering the first part of our trip. We left on May 23rd, that was a Tuesday, and our first day in Santa Cruz, Bolivia, was Wednesday, and that day we just got a lot of tutorial about Bolivia and about Santa Cruz. We had two really great leaders, Becca and Simon, who were part of the MCC down there, so we spent a lot of time with them and at the MCC base getting Bolivian food and just learning more about the culture. And then on Thursday, we got together with a school of Spanish students who are actually studying English, and we went to a local market and we did a scavenger hunt with them. And this was just a really neat experience because they were trying to learn English, we were trying to brush up on our Spanish, and so we kind of were in groups and each kind of had a student to work with, and that was really cool, just having one-on-one time with them and getting to know them and being able to practice the other's language. Friday we went to an orphanage, it's called Talita Kumi, and there's already pictures that went by. When we went there, we didn't really know what to expect. A lot of us were expecting that we were just going to spend time with the kids, play with them, have fun, but we were in for a surprise. They had a lot of projects that they wanted us to do. So some of those projects was doing mosaics, and if you guys noticed from the pictures where it said Talita Kumi, it was all out of mosaics. And so that's something that they were working on. They really wanted to make the orphanage a bright and positive place for the students and those people who visited as well. So we were working more on the inside with the mosaic murals. And then another group of us were working outside. They had gone around the community and had collected a bunch of sewer tops that people didn't want, and these things were, like, really heavy. And so what they had the kids do as a project one time is they made mosaics on top of the sewer tops, and they wanted to make a pathway out of it. So the other half of us were digging holes, putting these sewers in so that they could make a sidewalk out of it. And then we also got a tour of the orphanage. We got a little bit of background of the orphanage. And then we also had lunch with the children, and so that was a really neat experience just to kind of learn about their mission and what it was all about. And then that evening, we went to a camp called El Campamento, and we were with other groups besides just our own. Bluffton University was down there. They were just finishing up their trip. And then people from the Yaman and the Salters, which they called themselves the Yalters, were down there. And then we also had two Bolivian groups who were part of the local Mennonite churches down there to join us as well. So that was another great opportunity to practice our Spanish and get to know kids who are around our age from the country as well. We did a lot of games. We did singing. We ate together. Games such as volleyball, soccer, and card games. And so even though there was some bit of a language barrier, it was a really great experience. And I think a lot of us would say it was one of the highlights of the whole entire trip. And they wish we could have spent more than just one day there. And then Saturday evening, we came back to our base where we were staying. And then Saturday evening was actually, well, Saturday in general, was actually Mother's Day down in Bolivia. And so Linda, who was one of our leaders, we went out and we got her a cake. I think it was her favorite, coconut cake. And so that was also a really neat experience as well, just to be able to show appreciation.
I'm Cameron. Well, the pictures of Cochabamba are already going, but we were in Cochabamba for a week. We did a language school every morning from 8 to 12 for the whole week, and then in the evening we would do tackle issues that are happening in Bolivia, and the main one that's going on there is the water crisis. During the water crisis, the closer you live to the city, the shorter amount of water that you have for the month. So if you're in the city, you have about 15 liters of water per month. And it didn't really become an issue until one of the groups that we sit that were staying with a family didn't have any water. So it was amazing to see how we all came together as a group to have them take a shower, wash their clothes. And it also made me realize how much I take water for granted back in America. At the language school, they taught us everything that they could teach us in a four-hour time span. We went in between two different classes, and on the last day, we all played Uno, and it was just a highlight of the day because none of the teachers knew how to play Uno, even though that they were winning almost every single game. And during that week in Cochabamba, we also stayed with a host family. And so the host family that I stayed in, they knew barely any English, and I knew Spanish, but not that much Spanish. So we taught them some English, and they taught us Spanish. And with them, there's this idea of the macho man, and that the men don't really help out with anything, it's just the women. And so for my host family, it was different because the husband helped out with almost everything, even down to cooking and cleaning. And one thing that I did take away is that even though that we're back in America, my host family has still kept in contact with me since I've been back, and yeah, I can't wait to go back.
Anyway, so I'll talk about La Paz. The picture's already going. So La Paz was the last place we went to. It was the last week, and a lot of our like study was about the indigenous people, kind of how like their government changed in the pictures. We went to like the Senate and just kind of talked to some of them, and it was really interesting to see how people who work there, even from the states, view their like the obligations to Bolivia and how they collaborate back and forth. So we focused a lot on indigenous people, so we went to Lake Titicaca, and there we got to spend the day with families who live there. And it was about four or five of us in each group. In my group, we basically, the man of the house did all the work. So we went around on this little boat, and he had to like go out in the middle of the lake, and he collected this grass stuff. And all I can picture right now is Linda trying to manually do that with these little big things that are bigger than she is, and we get stuck in the mud. But just seeing how much they would do for their family, and some of the guys helped haul them back to the house, and just we ate lunch with them, and just seeing like the environment and the living conditions that they're in are just so eye-opening and overwhelming to you, especially if you've never traveled like me. So in the pictures there was a plaza, and it was like the biggest festival that Bolivia has all year. And we were just out there sitting on the steps waiting to get our group started, and these couple of older and younger guys come, and there's a huge language barrier. So we were just playing Frisbee, and it was just so awesome to have people who you couldn't even talk to just interact with you. And we ended up losing the Frisbees because they got thrown on top of this thing, but that was disappointing. But it just made their days, and like the interaction was just so amazing. And to finish up our trip, I think the day before we left, we ended up climbing a glacier, which climate change was a big issue, so we just explored it to see how much like it had melted, and there was barely any ice on top of it, but we ended up going way up, and everybody struggled with getting up there, because of course the altitude is crazy, so we were all dying, and I don't know if there was any pictures in there, because I missed it, but it was a good experience, and to see what some of the people go through every day, just to get up there, this main hike, up and down it every day. Overall, like, I'll definitely take away that it was a good experience, and definitely like interaction with people, even though we didn't have that much in common. I mean, it was so meaningful and eye-opening, and that's what I'll take away from it. But,
yeah. Okay, so way back at the beginning of May, we were all asked to read an article about studying abroad and to then write a pre-travel journal in response to what we read. This article challenged us to, among many things, travel lightly. Now, I know what you're probably thinking. Congratulations! You all tried to put less junk in your suitcases. What's new? Well, you are right. We did try to only pack what we really needed. But we were challenged to travel lightly in a more figurative sense. We tried to leave any pre-existing dispositions and any pre-existing expectations that we held at home. Because we made an effort to leave home with lighter suitcases in this sense, we were able to take in and absorb every experience, and therefore come home with suitcases that were and are much heavier. We came home with, among many, many other things, a growth in empathy. We also came home with the realization that although there may be barriers between people, such as cultural barriers, language barriers, or even experiential barriers, they can be broken down. Most people say that music is a way that people can reach across barriers, break them down, and join together. But while in Bolivia, we found that most of our most meaningful interactions with people were centered around play, which was particularly interesting to me as a kinesiology major, because we learn a lot about play and the different types of play, etc. Some of these playful interactions included playing soccer, volleyball, and life-size Dutch Blitz, among many other games at El Campamento and Santa Cruz, playing soccer and riding horses and singing silly songs with the boys at Vida y Esperanza in Cochabamba, playing with the children and our families during homestays in Cochabamba, and playing frisbee and catch with people in the plaza in La Paz. Personally, my absolute favorite interaction that I had while in Bolivia occurred in Cochabamba when we went to visit a clinic that was built by an organization called Mano a Mano Bolivia. As we were walking into the clinic, I noticed a playground outside of the clinic where children were playing. I went to the clinic, saw a couple of rooms, and listened to what the doctor and nurse had to tell us. When they gave us the opportunity to look around the clinic, I knew that I just had to go back outside and play with those kids. Our playtime may have only lasted about 15 minutes or so, but I learned more about those children in those 15 minutes than I've learned about other people that I've spent hours with here at home. You can learn more about someone through play than you can through talking to them. And let me tell y'all, all it took was 15 minutes of playing with those kids for them to absolutely steal my heart away.
So thank you so much for listening to our talk about our wonderful experience. Another things that she said was that we really learned about empathy too. And just being able to stay in host homes and just feel really uncomfortable sometimes. I remember, like, even before we got to Bolivia, when we were going through the airport, I just felt like I was the outsider, which I think is such a huge growing experience and a very large part of what cross-cultural means. And so we are all just really thankful for this opportunity. And thank you all.